Hi, this is Sean Kennedy. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of the American Journal of Nursing, and I'm very pleased to be speaking today with Mary Beth Flynn Mockick. Did I say that right?
You did. It's my pleasure to be with you today as well.
So, Mary Beth is a professor in the College of Nursing at the University of Colorado, the Anschutz Medical Campus in Aurora, and her co-author, Elizabeth Bridges, is a clinical nurse researcher at the University of Washington Medical Center in Seattle and a professor in the University of Washington School of Nursing. And both Mary Beth and Elizabeth coordinate a column for us. They're contributing editors for our critical care column in AJN. And this month, in the February issue of AJN, Mary Beth and Elizabeth wrote an article, which we were very happy to get, on managing sepsis and septic shock, current guidelines and definitions. So we know sepsis is the leading cause of death, I think more than one-third of all deaths in U.S. hospitals. So we were anxious to get something in about the new guidelines. And Mary Beth, why don't you tell us a little bit about, you know, how often have they been updating the guidelines? It seems that we've had them out before, and then they were updated and now again. So just could you tell us a little bit about how that works?
Sure. So some of the seminal work in sepsis actually goes back all the way to 1991, when Dr. Bone and colleagues published the first document that looked at sepsis and started defining sepsis so we could start to research and understand the syndrome that was happening to our patients and resulting in so many deaths. In 2002, the Society of Critical Care Medicine and the European Society of Intensive Care Medicine band together, and then they launched a website or initiative that's called Surviving Sepsis, or SSC, so it's the Surviving Sepsis Campaign.
Mm-hmm.
After they got together and they put together that Surviving Sepsis Campaign, one of the important elements that came out of that was additional research, additional definitions, and guidelines to help us consistently study sepsis and identify patients, and more importantly, give us interventions to try to enhance the survival rather than this high morbidity and mortality.
And this is where the bundles came out of?
Right. So what happened is in 2002, after Society of Critical Care Medicine and the European Society launched the Surviving Sepsis Campaign, they started to kind of systematically, consistently look at the evidence, and they revised the sepsis guidelines in 2004, 2008, 2012, and then again in 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Around 2012 and 2014 is when the CDC and CMS started saying, hey, we need to start measuring how good a job we are doing at catching patients with sepsis and implementing bundles or a group of interventions to reduce morbidity and mortality. So the bundles came out somewhere around 2012 and were recently re-revised in 2015, and those are used as metrics to kind of gauge our performance of how well we identify patients at risk of sepsis or who we think have sepsis, and then how quickly we implement interventions to try to treat our patients better and faster.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the article, you do talk about both SOFA, which is the Sequential Organ Failure Assessment score, as well as the QSOFA, which is the Quick SOFA score. Could you just explain the difference in those two?
Right. So when a patient has sepsis, we've got these guidelines or bundles that we know are put out to help say, you need to do these different interventions to try to mitigate the lack of perfusion that's happening to the patients and address the infection that's causing the sepsis syndrome. In 2016, a group of individuals, also Society of Critical Care Medicine and the European Society, kind of looked at the current definitions we were using to define sepsis, and they revised those, and that document's called the Sepsis 3 document.
Mm-hmm.
In looking at those definitions, what they did is they said, we have an opportunity to identify poor perfusion in patients using tools such as the SOFA or the QSOFA. And when we identify the pathophysiology of poor perfusion and we can link that to infection, we need to think sepsis.
Mm-hmm.
So the QSOFA is built off of a more complicated tool called SOFA. And SOFA stands for Sequential Organ Failure Assessment. And it actually came out in 1998 and 1996.
Oh, that old.
Yeah, by, you know, an author named Vincent, who's been involved in sepsis research for years. The SOFA score basically looks at multiple parameters of a patient, and it's used more commonly in the critically ill patient. But it basically has you look at how well is the patient oxygenating, what are their platelets, what is their bilirubin, what is their perfusion, what is their Glasgow Coma Scale or their mentation, and how well are their renals working. And the SOFA score has you assess the patient's organ perfusion and then gives you a scoring system that lets you say, if they have a SOFA score greater than 2 in one of those categories, you've got end organ perfusion problems. Mm-hmm. You need to dig harder and faster to see what is the cause. And if you suspect infection, think sepsis.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
When this article came out in 2016 with the Sepsis 3, they had done a large study with large databases and said, can we make this more simpler so that we can identify patients faster? And that's where they came up with the QSOFA or the Quick SOFA. And it's just 3 variables: any change in mentation, any respiratory rate greater than 22, or blood pressure less than 100. If your patient has 2 or more of those criteria, you need to think, we have a problem with end organ perfusion. Then, when you know you have end organ perfusion as a consequence, do you also have a potential for infection? If yes, think sepsis.
Yeah. Yeah, I really liked the inclusion of the Quick SOFA because, you know, we read a lot about rapid response teams and
right.
You know, many times the nurse will say, oh, I knew something was going wrong. And the Quick SOFA is sort of a wonderful quick take on, okay, what is going wrong? Here's 3 things that are definitely heading in the wrong direction and, you know, would be quick clues that a nurse could take in terms of identifying whether there's a rapid response needed. So I thought that was very valuable to include in the article.
Oh, thank you. And I couldn't agree more because you're so right. So many times nurses will know something's awry, and this helps objectify it so that you can say, I've got this perfusion problem based on these 3 elements of assessment,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
and you can activate a rapid response mm-hmm. Quicker.
Now, the main message that I was going to ask you what the main message is, but I think it's think sepsis when things are going wrong. But in terms of what you know, in writing this is, of course, you point out the nursing implications, and there's quite a few of them in terms of the clinical application for this. But in the sense of an overriding theme, like if I met you in an elevator and said, what's the most important message nurses should take away from this, what would you tell me?
I think it is think sepsis. I think so many times patients don't look that bad, but if we would assess our patients quicker and identify the potential risk of infection, and we start thinking sepsis sooner, it really is all about that early identification of the patient's risk and identifying that beginning lack of perfusion
mm-hmm.
to start to implement those interventions quickly. We've got to start that fluid resuscitation. We have to get our cultures and get antibiotics going. We need to give them oxygen. So it is not necessarily looking for it, but kind of thinking it when it's a possibility based on that patient history that comes in.
So, and I remember, I mean, we were all taught from day one in nursing school that in assessing patients that not to rely on blood pressure. I mean, blood pressure for years was, well, the patient might be going into shock if his blood pressure is low or something. But we've all been taught mentation, you know, the patient's a little off that day or, he started to get a little confused or mixing things up. And those subtle changes that we all know intuitively or, after being a nurse for a while and you could, knowing the patient, but now having these tools to quickly look and put, you know, 3 things together as an objective measurement before the blood pressure goes down, before the urine decreases, I think is just is so important. And I think the way you and Elizabeth laid it out in the article will be, a great read and an easy takeaway for our readers, whether they're working in critical care or acute care or in home care, for
right.
that matter. So, so thank you for the article and for your time on the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.